bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Mac is provided by UK2.net. Innovative, affordable, and reliable web hosting solutions.
Hello! Welcome to the Mac Show from the British Tech Network. I'm Ewan Rankin, and this week's Mac's news, such as it is, not an awful lot, is here. I've got my Dexter cap on, thank you. And the reason I've saved it for today is because Andy's on as well, and he's got his Dexter cap as well. Thank you ever so much.
Cheers. That means we're special.
We're special.
We like serial murders and their popularization in social society.
What does it say about us, mate? Popular shows on TV are CSI and a bloke who's anti-CSI, effectively. But...
Yes, I'm not special.
Sorry, mate. If you write to Robert, he might send you a cap. I'm sure you can buy them down at Walmart or something there. Joining me, fantastic panel to discuss the week's Mac news. Top left, Gaz Maz. How you doing, mate?
I'm absolutely sponrific. Thank you very much, Ewan. Looking forward to my games at the weekend.
Sponrific? Was that wrong? Hong Kong Fooey?
It could have been, actually, yeah.
Hong Kong Fooey.
Sponrific.
Yeah, I think it might be, actually.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So you're playing Colts tomorrow, so you're going to be knackered.
Yes.
Yeah. Old man. Bad luck, pal. Next to him, Mr. Anatko. Splendid in Dexter cap. Well done, mate. Looking great. Good week?
Moderately good.
All right, okay.
Again, as you can see, the lilacs are in bloom.
Blossom on the blossom tree. Very good, mate.
I was at the University of Colorado last week at a conference. And they have lilacs all over the place. And that was probably the first time I've been in the University of Colorado where something was covering up the pot smell. So,
now you said that you were at you were doing a thing on interstellar space travel, mm-hmm. and something else on world economy, and you were taking part in the panel. I mean, you're either you bulled your way through that, mate, or your diversity of knowledge is huge.
It's a cool conference. It's basically 100 panels with about 100 different people from all different walks of life. Sometimes you can tell that, okay, this is about internet privacy. I bet that I'm the person who's supposed to come up with facts and figures. And then sometimes you're on a panel in which you're just there for the outsider opinion. Interstellar space travel, I was qualified to talk on. Economics, I was a guy who's there to say, you know, there was an episode of Sanford and Son in which Fred Sanford, he wanted to buy this figurine, but he couldn't have the money for it. I think that's relevant to the situation of micropayments in Central America right now. Yeah, that's
so. It's what qualifies you to talk about interstellar travel? I want to go on that course.
Okay, well, I read and I write about these things, and I talk to astronauts, and I talk to like physicists and researchers. So, and also, this is a conference in which you're not meant to be there with your like 20 slide PowerPoint presentation with the charts and the circles and graphs and the arrows and the pictures in the back of each one explaining what the graph is. It's mostly, even if you are like the stone cold expert on the panel, you're meant to talk kind of, you know, extemporaneously for 10 minutes on the general subject. So, as a matter of fact, I've been doing this conference for about 15 years in a row. It was only like 5 years before I started attending that they would actually tell you what you're going to be talking about before you arrived. That's how much they did not want someone to come with the same presentation that they've been like, you know, roadshowing since the Johnson Good. Administration.
Well, based on the amount of Mac news there's been this week, mate, I think we may come back to interstellar travel. Quite there possible. Next to him, Chris Forsman from Comcast Hell. How are you doing, mate?
Two thumbs up.
Good man. Good week?
I just finished up a nearly 4,000 word feature on mastering for iTunes that I put a lot of research into, and it feels really good to have it done.
Mm. 4,000 words is a lot, mate. I'm not sure I know 4,000 words.
Well, some of them were repeated.
Oh, okay.
I probably use the words mastered for iTunes couple dozen times.
Fair enough.
Let's hope my tip that I'm going to talk about later is possibly in a document.
It would be nice. And last but by no means least, chairman of the Mac User Group in London, Steve Neighbour, with new glasses. How you doing, pal?
I've just noticed that I think I might have mirrored my glasses on Chris. I think I've got the same glasses as you, Chris.
You do? There you go. No?
I've now survived and I now am at the right level. I've got the right glasses for being a true kind of geek. Yeah, that's the right word.
It's just a comparison. No? Oh, actually, you're not a million miles away, are you?
Similar-ish.
That's not bad.
Similar-ish. No, I just need to tilt my head the other way.
Have you noticed you never see Steve Naber and Chris Forsman on the same podcast? Well, we've blown that myth today.
Right out of the water.
Outed Clark Kent.
These are Paul Smith frames that I got at a thrift store.
Oh, now you're dropping labels on me. I'm definitely going to lose. No, I haven't got the labels.
Bad luck.
Yeah, and I'm good. Had a great week. We had a London Mac user meeting on Monday, and we had a brilliant debate about Mountain Lion. And I've been causing trouble in work this week with demanding my IT company move towards iPads, which is probably, they're probably swearing at me every day.
You're kidding. They've got a doll with a lock of your hair and pins in it.
With right where the force.
No, you're not a popular guy.
Describe for me how the procedures of demanding they switch to iPads. Do you like storm into the office? You slam your fist on the table like the opening scenes of The Prisoner, or
you it's more in my face. iPad.
I sit in a meeting and they say, "Oh no, we've got tablets. We've got tablets. We're going to deploy them. We bought them in 2003. They're waterproof. They're about an inch and a half thick. You'll like them."
I am and not I'm, a note.
I just start laughing.
I am not a Samsung Note.
No,
I am
no,
an
we're
iPad.
Talking, we're talking 7 years old because that's what they brought in. I think they run Windows ME or something
So they make thinner tough books now.
Yeah, now we've been in touch with a fair few companies and we're pushing them hard.
Totally good. The week in Mac, Walmart have got their own iTunes stores. I think we'll start with that one because that sounds horrific. Philip, what's his face? The French bloke, Stark, who was making Steve Jobs' yacht. He's apparently still making Steve Jobs' yacht. He's not making an iPhone 5 or anything fancy. The BBC has reported that some parents are suing Apple over in-Apple charging for or in-app game charges. I've got to say, this is one that we talked about the other week, and I'm quite passionate about this because some of them are absolute rip-offs and they're banking on you screwing up and leaving your passcode open. iWork is no longer available as a trial. You're going to have to buy it from the store, but based on the fact it's a while old, I think we'll talk about whether there's an upgrade. And there's some rumours about 3D technology to an iPhone just because Tupac got on a stage with Snoop Dogg and... There we go.
Hey, Thug Life.
Well, should we start with Apple stores in Walmart? Because, I mean, you couldn't really get... The two ends of chic would be defined with with Apple at kind of red and Walmart would be at violet, wouldn't it? I mean, it's you can't get further apart than this, yet they're going in there. Tim Cook is clearly stamping his own authority on the firm, which is I like to see, but he's taking the entire faculty, inverted commas, to see Cirque du Soleil totem. He's giving out a dividend soon, he reckons. He's buying back shares soon, he reckons. I mean, how long before we get a Newton?
Well, yes, to be honest with you, and it'd be nice to see some new products, wouldn't it?
You really want a Newton? There's an E300 that you can get, an eMate 300 or whatever it is.
Well, like $100,000.
Yeah, it's $8,000 at the last bid, wasn't it? But I mean, this is the Walmart Apple store.
Well,
I mean,
what I'm most concerned with is that it make like the time space fold on itself.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, like they put they're going to have the little Apple store then a store in the Walmart, and then like it's going to like eat the universe.
It's a black hole principle because it's so out of proportion.
It's like matter and antimatter. Like
it'll suck all the customers in, and then we'll have interstellar travel. We're back to it. Andy, you were going to say something sensible, mate. Do start us, please.
Oh, well, don't introduce me with saying I was about to say something sensible. What I was actually about to say was that my theory is that Tim Cook was in an Apple store. They looked around and said, you know what? You almost never see like 63-year-old people in the Apple store with like torn off sleeveless shirts with tattoos that look like they were done in some sort of van in 1988. Maybe there's a segment of the customer base we're not accessing by selling through the Apple store. I know! Walmart! You know, were people just walking off the streets smelling mostly of kerosene and you know chill. Oh god, it's just it's the Lord of the Flies of retail.
I've got a theory on this.
Go ahead.
I want to know where Mr. John is it Browent, the former chief exec from Dixon's started with Apple. because I reckon he might have started and this might have been one of his first moves, because it's the type of things that Dixon's were kind of, it's the level that Dixon's were at, wasn't it? Asda or Walmart in the US. And maybe it's one of his first recommendations.
Oh my God, yeah, I hadn't thought of that.
Aren't Dixon's part, or PC World part of Dixon's, or some sort of company?
Yeah, they're all part of Dixon's store group.
Yeah, yeah, but it's all the similar level, gradients of customer crap that Andy was describing, wasn't it?
You guys don't have Walmart over there, do you?
We have Asda, which is to say they're owned by Walmart.
Okay, I get it. I should admit it. But
they don't sell guns.
Well, we have guns, and mostly it's just basically because you know that at any point, one half of the store is going to turn against the other half of the store. Like if there is like an air raid siren within distance, some people are going to start believing this is the end of days, either the biblical end of days or the UN one world government coming to take care of business. And that's when Walmart's going to be the first beachhead. It's just I'm really, in all seriousness, yes, it's probably it makes sense in the sense that Apple wants to sell products to everybody, and Walmart has outreach in places that, you know, the Apple Store does not. But man, I really want to see all the paperwork that's inside this agreement, because the thing that you notice Walmart after Walmart after Walmart, they're just not good at keeping a tidy store. They're really not good at providing a solid customer experience. The only reason why I've seen displays of Apple products inside Walmart that were actually functioning was because it's like an end cap that ships to the store like hermetically sealed, like a museum exhibit, where the employees could not screw this up unless they decided to take the one power cord that's sticking out of this encased enclosure and just basically decide, well, what if we were to simply hammer these two tongs flat and then try to put it into the outlet sideways? So I'm really curious to see how they're going to articulate Apple inside Walmart and make it a good experience for the consumer.
I mean, was this always coming, though? Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Was this always coming, though? Because Apple have got that incredible growth year on year, or quarter to quarter, year on year, when you analyze it, it's a ridiculous percentage, which is amazing growth. To continue that growth going forward, they've got to extend to more and more places to keep that growth going. Is this just another step to kind of enable them to do that?
I don't think they're concerned as much about growth as much as are we leaving money on the table? Is there a segment of the population that doesn't have access to Apple products, and can we get to them by putting it through a sort of tacky retail establishment?
Because of the population that can't afford one. Yeah.
I mean, to be fair, you know, Walmart has had Apple products for a couple of years now. I think since the iPhone 3G launched.
Right, but again, it's been this like encased enclosure. So I'm not sure how they're going to, the moment that someone has to come up to a Walmart employee and say, "Hi, can you explain to me how an iPad works?" That's going to be where everything falls apart. Usually, I can't get them to explain to me what's the difference between these two Rubbermaid trash cans. They don't know.
I think that's the point. That's the separation here, is that, you know, in UK, we've talked about Dixon Stores Group, we've got PC World, and PC World have sold back probably now for about 3 years, but it's always been the black table that was in line with everything else, and it was their attempt at chic when they weren't clearly going to be able to do it, and you knew that they were just selling Apple stuff. They were a reseller, no more than that. But this is kind of like everything that Apple was not about. This is about Apple, you know, cheapening itself and selling itself in a market where if you're doing it to sell more units, Steve Jobs would have said, no, we're not about selling units. We're about selling quality products in niche areas, keeping the price up, etc. And you know, there's rumors of a cheap iReader coming out now at $299. That kind of thing is taking away the ethic of what got Apple into this position in the first place. I'm serious there. I'm not trying to make fun of that.
Well, I see it a little differently, because I think the fact that they have been selling products through Walmart at all sort of cheapened that, and what they're trying to do is actually step up that experience. Even though you're going into a Walmart, they're trying to, you know, class up the experience of buying an Apple product, even though you're in a Walmart. Which
are we seeing Apple staff or are we seeing Walmart staff doing here, though? I mean, if it's Walmart staff, as you're suggesting, Andy, then ho hell,
right?
But if Apple is staffing these with their own staffers, then
Are they going to be wearing the blue Walmart golf shirts, or are they going to be wearing like the cool green Apple t-shirts?
And Chris, are you saying that Apple are actually trying to increase or improve the shopping experience of Walmart shop?
No, they're trying to increase the shopping experience of buying an Apple product at Walmart.
There's
not
a little
trying
bit
to improve
enough,
Walmart at all.
Yeah, fair enough.
Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of an experiment here. I'm not the type of person that does hang around in these establishments, but there's another establishment called Harrods, which is the other end of the scale, which is it's a five-star shop in the middle of London. And this place you go if you want to buy a lion, if you want to go buy a grand piano, if you want to go buy...
That's a stuffed
anything.
Lion, we should point out, no?
No, you did, but there were some guys in the 70s who bought a lion. Or was it a tiger? Either way.
Equally horrific.
But Apple have opened a store in Harrods, so it's a bit like opening in Walmart, but slightly different. And similar conversations though. Harrods, everyone suited and booted who are staff, apart from the Apple store, where they do have. I'm not sure whether they're Apple staff, but the staff there are in Apple t-shirts and kind of fit for the Apple store, really. So I think Apple are just expanding into the far reaches of retail, whichever that is, whether it's the Harrods market or whether it's the Walmart market. I think they've just got to get the market share.
At least Harrods is very, very compatible. I mean, I shopped at Harrods a couple times when I'm in London, and both times it really was an Apple store level of performance. I bought like the $10 pair of socks that I needed, like a big Mr. Big Spender. And then because I'm a loving son, I told the clerk, my mom only wants me to bring one thing from London, and that's a Harrods shopping bag. Could you like put it in a larger bag? And he brought out like the entire collection of like Harrods bags. Like if I bought like a tuxedo with a top hat, I would have gotten this box and this bag. And that's the level of service that you get at Harrods. Walmart, the service is almost invisible. I mean, you just can't find somebody who knows what they're talking about, and you just can't find anybody, period. So I'm just curious as to how they're going to they really do care about customer experience end to end. That's the whole reason why they went to the Apple stores. They developed the Apple stores to begin with. So I'm wondering if that's going to involve just bringing some guy with electric cattle prod and just putting electro shock collars on every single Walmart employee and training them via negative reinforcement to actually be friendly and helpful to customers, or whether they're going to have, you know, their own boots on the ground, their own Apple employees that are sort of embedded inside Walmart.
I've just got this vision in my head of this guy with his dog collar. So this is
there are a lot of people at Walmart who wear dog collars. So
it's got a retina display. Oh, ow, ow. Oh, no, it hasn't got a retina display.
Most of the college there to cover up the Hitler tattoos.
I thought Andy was going to tell us that he did go to Harrods to buy a lion there for a minute.
The Boston Lion. There's the title. Yeah. We've got Peter in the chat room who's in Australia, and I'm guessing Dick Smith Powerhouse is an equally bad store over there. But
no, that sounds a classy joint like Harrods.
Dick Smith. We've got a rival title already. Dick Smith Powerhouse MacPherson is not a Dick Smith employee. So I'm presuming on that basis he's not an Apple employee either. There we go. I don't know who he is.
He's some random person.
He's a bloke that helps out, yeah.
That's good, because a random person off the street would be more helpful than a Walmart employee.
he's a vagrant. It just comes into the wall.
So, but if you asked him, and the guy in the chat room can help us this, if you asked that person, was it Dick?
Dick.
What's the difference between the Retina display and the normal display on the iPad 2? Would he actually be able to tell you the real answer without just going for the upsell? Or would he go for the upsell? If he's somebody who could actually tell you the answer without trying to go for the upsell, then Apple have probably put some proper training into that person.
I was sitting thinking we should get Dick Smith on the show, but we couldn't publish that show. It would never go out if we had Dick Smith on the show.
But it looks like it's a franchise in the store, from what you're saying. He runs the Apple section as a business.
Separate franchise.
Yeah. Awesome.
Now, what I'm most concerned about is there's going to be like that one cool, smart guy that works at a Walmart somewhere, and they're listening to this podcast and be like, oh, man, those guys are jerks.
Yeah, but he's on his own, so. Give it a go if you think you're hard enough, mate. Definitely. Not impressed then. That's it then. That's the news. Right, there's two more Mac Trojans out there. We've got Backdoor OS X Sub SabPub A. Snappy. The fact it starts with back door is pretty horrific to begin with. And there's another one, which I can't see on the story. SubPub variant. There we go. Old school compared to its sibling. Instead of attacking through malicious website, it's infected Microsoft Word documents as a vector distributed by email. I didn't understand any of that.
They're really going for the Mac audience, aren't they? Going for a Microsoft Word document.
Good point. But, well, no, actually, there's a lot of the viruses that I get come through in XML files and Word documents. And they're all Windows, admittedly, but Sophos catches them and says, you know, I've quarantined it. What do you want me to do? And I just leave them there. I can't be bothered to try and get rid of them if I have to do it manually. I mean, there's a change in the tide for definite. But, I mean, we were saying a year ago, get yourself some antivirus software. And Monday night, we spent a lot of time talking to people saying, get something. You should have had something by now. I mean, is this the floodgates opening, or is this just a trickle still?
I think the real important lesson here that would be really good for a lot of people to learn is to use software update. Use it. Click the OK. Let it install it. Are you listening?
Well, that's only getting rid of the Java update. And to be honest...
Well, no. The whole Microsoft Word variant uses old... exploits
right.
from older versions of Word that have been patched already in both 2004 and 2008.
So you've got to make sure what you're saying, Chris, is you've got to make sure you update all of your software, not just because using the software update button on the Apple icon obviously won't update any of the application.
True. But keep your software updated.
To your point, Ewan, is this a trickle? It is still a trickle. Let's be honest. It's still a trickle. How many millions of viruses and Trojans are there for the Windows environment? And if we counted the Mac Trojans and viruses, there's probably still, at an outside look, there's probably still less than 100.
Yeah, and also, people have been asking me about buying antivirus software for the Mac, and I've been saying, not quite yet, just make sure you run system update regularly, because there is no manufacturer of Mac antivirus has yet to establish a track record of being a good tool. And that's only that's not because that these companies are being dishonest. It's because there just hasn't been enough volume to show which companies are better at identifying, which ones are better at updating, which ones are better at inobtrusively monitoring processes for things that are naughty. So until there's one company or one product that really stands head and shoulder above the rest, and also until Apple demonstrates that, nope, they're not up to the challenge of providing system resources for battling it, I'm not quite ready to say to endorse a certain $50 or $60 or $70 product.
You guys will correct me if I'm wrong on this, but have the antivirus software providers for Mac been very quiet over the last 2 weeks? Because I know what I'd be doing if I run those company now.
No.
I'd be really pushing it and making sure everyone knew my AV was the best option. Or have they been doing if I missed it?
No, I mean, Symantec's been in the press. Kaspersky's been in the press. You know, they're all offering like free... flashback removal tools, and it's like, here, we have this cool removal tool. If you like us, by the way, here's Norton antivirus, or here's, you know, Kaspersky antivirus, or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, they've been taking their chance to make themselves known.
Okay.
I mean, is part of this just the fact that the anatomy of the Mac experience with malware is not that well known yet. I mean, these are, you know, they're getting the name Trojan Worm, etc. So they've got a similar kind of function, but actually maybe recognizing that through the action of the OS is an entirely different process than it is for a Windows machine where you've got a long history of evolution. So to a certain degree, we're naturally going to be in a state whereby the malware people are going to react a lot slower at the moment until they've got things that can really check the genesis of how these things get into the system and then start their work.
Yeah.
I mean, Apple's been doing a lot of work on this kind of other side of it as far as, you know, the sandboxing they're implementing, the whole concept of the Mac App Store in and of itself, and even the trusted developer, signing software thing they're doing too. It's sort of to just close off those vectors where, I mean, the majority of malware is essentially getting someone to double click an icon and then giving up their admin password. That is the whole basis of most of the software. Now, some of it, you know, like some of the flashback variants, if you just went to the wrong website, it could, you know, send some kind of Java thing and just install through that mechanism. But, you know, again, it's one of the reasons why Apple is just like, we're not going to put Java on there by default. The latest Java update also turns it off by default if you haven't used it in the last 35 days or something to that effect. So generally speaking, you know, you can just keep Java off your machine. Some people obviously have to use it for some kind of like work-related websites or things like that. But for the most part, you know, Apple's, again, they're trying to push away from even using Java at all. Since it's a popular exploit, they've been pushing away from having Flash on this machine at all because it's such a popular exploit.
A lot of the airport sharing stuff uses Java, though. If you look at Air Server Video, that's all Java.
Oh, you mean over
the web? Things that use airport as the AirPlay technique, backwards and forwards, a lot of those are using Java. Certainly Air Server Video does.
Huh. I wasn't aware of that.
You mean system level stuff or third party?
No, I'm talking if you get Air Video server and Air Video for your Mac and your iPad. Yeah,
sorry. Then
none of that stuff really works without Java behind it. There's a lot of Java stuff there in the apps.
Disabling the AV apps.
Sorry, what do you mean?
Apple by disabling Java or disabling the AV apps is what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I mean, if you say that there's no, if you're saying that you know the solution for Apple for anything older than Snow Leopard was to say we'll switch Java off entirely because there's nothing we can do to stop it. Well, if you're using AirPlay and any of those things, which I don't think you probably can you? You've got to be up to Snow Leopard at least. Then you know those things. If your application is say, right, I'm going to shut Java off now and just I'm safer without it. There's an awful lot of those AirPlay things are going to disappear.
I think it's not just a case of Apple saying that there's no way we can stop Java. It's just another step in their saying, see, this is why we don't like having outside code as part of our operating system. And this is why we decided to drop like built. This is why we forced you to have to install it yourself instead of pre-installing. I'm sorry. I think there are also some legal considerations to bundling it inside the OS. Mm. But I just think that in principle, if there's a way that they can do something in-house and not have to rely on some outside non-open source code, they're actually going to go for it. I do think that, for instance, that Steve Jobs' vendetta against Google was a very real and present danger for Google. But I think that one of the reasons why they want to get off of their reliance on Google Maps and build their own traffic and mapping solution is because they just don't like the idea that they're reliant on this outside company for such an important feature. So nobody inside Apple is happy that the first successful deep in the field Trojan malware is out there. But I think that they're at least satisfied that, you see, this is why we don't like this stuff. This is why we're only doing this under duress, and this is why we removed Flash from wherever we could put it.
Is the long-term goal of Apple then to create a very secure walled garden of all software using Gatekeeper and the Mac App Store? And really, their only vulnerability then is going to be email. But is there going to be a firewall creation or some methodology through email that's going to just completely burn everything out and you've got to be locked in there? Or is there still going to be a bit of a Wild West for them?
No, I think that Apple's going to. Apple's probably realizing that, you know what, we've already. Our developers are pissed off anyway. We may as well just. Why piss them off 95%? Let's just piss them off 100% by introducing even more strict alternatives to code signing and making and locking down the operating system. It's a real interesting period of transition even before this happened, just with Gatekeeper. Between sandboxing and Gatekeeper, all the different rules that developers have to follow right now to make sure that their apps are going to work under 10.8, you really have to go back to, I think, the transition between PowerPC and Intel to how much of inconvenience it's going to be to all the developers to get everything working with this brand new thing.
I think to even extend that further, what I see so far, and I think that some some developers would probably agree, is that essentially for the average user, it's going to be total lock, like iOS-style lockdown for the average user. For the experienced user, there's going to be preferences or settings or terminal commands or whatever where you can do the kind of stuff that we, you know, that we, when I say we, I mean experienced computer users that have been doing this for years, are more accustomed to. And I think it's going to be harder and harder to do it that way, to the point where the only people who are installing software from, you know, random unknown sources outside the Mac App Store or whatever are going to be the users that have enough sense to identify, you know, sketchy websites and weird installers or weird processes running. You know, those users who understand how to do that kind of stuff, they're going to be the ones who are doing things like, you know, downloading software from a random website to install it. Whereas, you know, the average user is going to be going to the Mac App Store, or they're going to be able to download software from a trusted developer that signs their code, you know, and they're going to, you know, it's going to just bring that level up to the point where they don't, the average user is not going to have to think about doing safe computing because the environment for them will be safe. And I think that's the goal that Apple, personally, that's what I think Apple's trying to come to.
But we're getting a lot of Windows users coming over. I blame them because, you know, they're already used to going here, there, and there.
Let's blame Microsoft. Guys,
it's a bit of a generalist statement, but just hear me out. They are used to going here, there, and everywhere for their software. So they may come over and continue to do the same thing. So, you know,
I think you're talking about a Mac user there, because Mac users have always been about the shareware and freeware.
Well, no, absolutely, but equally so have Windows users. I mean, to say that the average user now is just going to use the Mac App Store, a lot of new users are ex-Windows users, and they like a lot of ex-Mac or Mac users, are used to going around the web looking for software. I know where Apple are going, I think I agree with it. I think it's certainly the way to go. But as Andy says, it's going to be pissing a lot of developers off. But longer term, it's where we've got to be if we want to be safe. But we're never going to be, you know, 100% safe, are we?
Can we also say, as a point of pride, that now that we've had a chance to look at this new Mac virus, the Mac version of this virus is simpler, more elegant, beautiful structured code than those clunky Windows viruses. I mean, it's part of the back of the virus has to look just as pretty as the front of the virus, because you're the person who wrote the virus and you know it's there.
You wouldn't see this virus in Walmart. No.
Mac users are accused of being arrogant sometimes. But after the whole Apple commercial thing where it was Mr. PC and Mr. Mac, and Macs don't get viruses, and it's you, PC, that needs to get in the special outfitting and stay away from those viruses. But now what you're saying is, it's those PC users coming over to Mac. That's why it's happening.
Well, I'm a PC user.
It could be seen as...
I'm a PC user that came over, and that's exactly what I did. I started looking at all those sites. It wasn't until I learned that actually... you could trust a lot of the Mac software that's, you know, in the environment where you're looking. Whereas you go and look for Windows software, you used to go and look for Windows software, and you'd go here, there, and everywhere and find it. You'd get links to it, and those links are prevalent because there are so many people out there just clicking on links and downloading stuff willy nilly, putting an exe on their file, double clicking it, and away you go. I've been there and I've come over from that side. Now, I'm not blaming them. It's just the environment they've come from.
It's their upbringing.
I reckon it's
blame
the sociology.
The parents.
And
blame
also,
the parents who bought the Windows XP machine.
Can I just say, a lot of people say, Mac users say, there's never any viruses on the Mac. I believe, and I didn't know this until this Trojan came out, that the first ever virus was on a Mac. And also, I think what they've said is there aren't hardly any, or there are very rare viruses on the Mac, is what people tend to say.
The phrase is security through obscurity. What I have to explain to some, like to normal humans, is that this is a huge, huge multi-billion dollar business, the business of getting inside, getting into your computer. And it's not just to scrape your keyboard for credit card passwords. It's to basically increase the size and the power of a botnet that can then be used for all kinds of really nasty things, from anonymously spreading spam to crunching passwords to doing denial of service attacks. So the fact that this industry hasn't been really interested in attacking Macs is more because there's so many more Windows machines out there than Macs right now. The other thing that I have to explain to them is that...
To be fair, the exploits were easier.
Yes. I'm sorry, on what?
On Windows. It used to be.
Yeah, that's another point, that most of the problems are with Windows XP, which I think is still the largest installed user base of Windows right now. Partly because people just have these old machines they don't want to upgrade, partly because it's a widely pirated system. But the other thing I have to explain is that sometimes to my own people is that realize that Windows 7 is really very secure. There are not a whole lot of comparatively speaking, there's not a whole lot of malware out for Windows 7, because at some point Microsoft did realize that Windows XP was not working. The infrastructure was just not adequate to the task of all these attacks. And they started really paying very close attention to how to lock down their system to make those kind of exploits harder and harder to pull off. I mean, it's popular opinion that Windows 7 at this point is even more secure than macOS. And I think we're starting to see the ease with which this particular problem has brought up really just underscore that.
Steve, get going, mate. No worries at all.
Okay, first X.
Yeah.
Just someone dull.
That's all right. Good discussion. Good discussion. I mean, the question's got to be, to finish it off, really, I suppose. My mum's got an iMac. She's got no choice because I could give it to her. But let's say you've got a mum who's got an iMac. Would you be telling her to put something on there now? Quick round the robin.
Not until things shake up a little bit more.
Bear in mind, this is my mother.
Well, it's your mother, not mine, so who cares? that does cut right down to it. If you're the person who has to pay for it, also, every time there's some sort of a pop-up that says, excuse me, ma'am, but I noticed that you're trying to print something, you realize that not over 12% of all exploits are happened by accessing the CUP server in Unix. Would you like to allow this or deny this? Yes, and cancel. Because... man alive. I mean, this is the reason why I don't recommend Windows. I used to like stop recommending Windows to my friends and family, because I would always get that, yeah, but Norton says that there might be a malware with this. I'm saying, auntie, it's from Microsoft Word. I installed it for you myself. it's an installer that's been signed by Microsoft. I'm not sure that Microsoft is trying to. Actually, they're probably just trying to install something ad based into your system. And so if you want all the headaches that are associated with most antivirus, then go ahead. I just don't want to have to deal with it.
For exactly the same reason. No, not yet.
Not yet. Okay, not Chris. Yet. Not yet. Agreed. Not yet.
Not yet.
Not yet for me either.
I must be abnormal then, because I'm ruining it. I've been ruining it for a year. It's the fuel. Chat room.
Ewan, you know what you're doing.
No, you're see, exactly, Ewan. You're the survivalist who has like the 500 gallons of water, the 8 shotguns, and the 3 years worth of MREs like in a bunker underneath. And so when the zombies or when the Ruskies or when the UN comes to take you away, you're going to be the only people, you're going to be laughing at us.
Come the Iranians, mate.
You got to remember the question, Ewan. Would you put it on your mother or mother-in-law's?
It's already on there.
Yeah, but no. What I'm okay. I wouldn't. I've got Sofas, but you know, I'll run it occasionally. I don't run it all the time, but I certainly wouldn't put it on.
Well, it's on. Don't forget though that of all the stuff that's out there, I mean, the talks about is it the Clam AV one?
Yeah,
Clam AV, Clamex AV. That runs, but it doesn't scan. You have to scan yourself with that manually. And the Sophos one sits there and actively searches. It runs like a normal AV one on a Windows machine. So,
as you said at the start, it generally finds Windows virus.
Yeah, and it's not. It's you know, we slagged off Little Snitch last week a little bit, and it's nothing like that. I mean, when it pops stuff up, it's found it, and it quarantines it, and that's it. You know, it's it's a happier user experience, apart from the fact there's quite a few, and there's still quite a few that you have to remove manually. And if you've got no idea about a command line, then you're stuffed. You're never going to get these things off. But beauty is that they're in quarantine and they will just expire most of the time as well. I found out it's my you delete it and all of a sudden about half a day later it's back up again, and it's actually my Time Machine backup that's got it stuffed in there. So the chat room loves Sophos. At the moment we've got yes Sophos, Sophos all day, Sophos rules. Tone says Norton has sucked the big one for a long time now, which I don't know who Norton is, maybe Graham. And Flick Norton comes through from Super Chicken. I recommend Sophos to my customers every time, says Matt. Sophos is the one to get them, says Jinx. There we go.
Dick Smith from the Powerhouse Mac told me to get Norton. That's what he recommended to me.
Dick Smith.
Dick Smith, yeah.
We can't say the W word, but we can make all these. Is this episode of Are You Being Served or something?
Thank you.
I just hope Apple stops sandboxing these apps quickly, because I just don't find the virus thing interesting. For the sake of my London Mac user group and also the podcasts that I listen to, this week there's a new virus. It's not, it's not the best thing. Come on, let's sandbox it all.
By the way, it can't be. Are You Being Served? Because there's none of us here can show our pussy. There we go. Thank you, Mrs. Slocum. We have had a question. Now, normally we only get questions on the photo show, but we've had one for the Mac team, and it's been such a venerable group on. And this lady sent this in once she found out that Steve was on particularly.
Okay, is this my mum?
And this is your mum. Your mum. Okay.
Oh dear.
Hi, mum.
Because you're on, your mum has sent a question in, and I don't know if she's going to ask you to wash behind your ears or before you get to bed or anything, but here we go. This is the question from Mrs. Neighbour, and it's a good one, actually. Not bad at all.
Hi, guys. We're now here in sunny Roscoff. It isn't quite so sunny today. In fact, it's pretty miserable.
Oh, she's giving us a view out the window.
Perhaps you'll be able to answer a few queries for me. I've now bought extra storage on the cloud, and I'm showing that I've got 4.5 gigabytes of iMovie there on the cloud. Well, I know how to stream my normal photographs, but how do you stream those things that you've backed up onto the cloud? Deleted them from my iPad, but now how do I use them from there? And secondly, give me a bit of advice about music I can use on movies. I love making movies because they tell the whole story. So how much am I affected by copyright? I read all the details. Those are just the things I want to
say. Is that your dad in the background, Steve?
Yeah, moaning. Oh, get off that woman.
Get off that bloody thing. You're always on it.
iPad.
Okay, so
there's two good questions there.
Just give me a bit of background on this.
So let's just summarise so that we've got it.
Sorry, go on.
The two questions, Steve, just to verify, are that she's got movies stored in the cloud now off iMovie, and she's deleted them from her main iPad, so she wants to make sure that she can still watch them, and she wants to know what music she can put on movies so that she doesn't get caught out by the MPAA or the RIAA or the British Phonographic Industry. Yeah.
This is the thing that it really gets me on a rant in terms of, we're coming up to June, which is when Mobile Me Gallery will stop working, and that's what she wanted as a 74-year-old new iOS user. She wanted somewhere, or she wants someone, to share her photos, share her videos with the golf club, with the her friends, all of the people, things that she's making. She wants somewhere to share them and show them. Now, yes, there's an option of putting them on YouTube, but that's quite complex for a typical user. What size do I put on? What music can I use or not? But you can't put your photos in the YouTube as well. So from a typical user point of view, I just think Apple are just stepping away from the gallery thing that they have, which is up and running, working. That's what she wants, just a simple upload, and it's in one place, not in two different places, i.e. Flickr and YouTube. So it drives me mad, and it's typical when she says, I've backed it to the cloud, so I'd like to watch it from the cloud now, and I'm kind of thinking, oh, I'm not sure if she can do that.
Is Journal going to be the option?
For what? I mean, at the moment, I think this is a really good point, that the gallery system, and I know Steve suffers from this, having put an awful lot of photos up into the gallery, that if that's going to disappear, what's the average user going to do? No answers from anyone. That's worrying.
I love galleries. I thought it was a superb way to share photos and share videos. I thought it was absolutely superb. So I agree with Steve. It's Steve, isn't it?
Yep.
More particularly Steve's mum.
Or Steve's mum, whichever.
I agree, but I still don't know exactly what I'm going to do with those videos and photos to share. You know, there are lots of other options out there, but there was nothing as neat as just sharing from iPhotos. I mean, I've got 25,000 photos in iPhoto. I know it's too many, but it's, you know, it's a one click, you know, up you go. You can put password on it. Simple. Now, I think, and I haven't used this yet because I haven't transferred over to iCloud, but people keep talking about, is it journal? There's an option to set up a journal. And I don't know whether that is the possible route that people are going to be able to go, but I haven't used it, so I can't wax lyrical about it at this point.
There's a comment in the chat room: iOS photo journals are great, and Dropbox can do galleries as well.
Yeah. The problem with Dropbox though is it's not simple. It's not that one. It's not a simple process. Mm-hmm. As easy as sharing from, let's say, iPhoto, for example.
Well, yeah. It seems to me also that in Mountain Lion and also in iOS that Apple's really promoting the use of Vimeo too over YouTube. I don't know if that's some kind of sticking it to Google thing or what that is, but.
But Vimeo's equally pointless. If you don't like YouTube, you don't like Vimeo equally.
Yeah, it just surprised me because people know what YouTube is. I mean, sorry Vimeo, but people know YouTube.
Go ahead, Andy.
I was about to say also, it seems like Vimeo and YouTube are kind of overkill for what you want to do. If all you want to do is not have to take up 2.8 gigabytes of your 16 gigabyte iPad with files just because you want to show your granddaughter's birthday party on an occasion. I would be a little bit hesitant about uploading stuff to YouTube, even if you're doing it privately, because you never know. Sometimes a checkbox is not where you thought it was, and something that you thought was private is now public. And that's just why I bother with that. I agree with the person in the chat room. Every time I have a video file that I want to share, I feel as though I want to have it handy so I can show it off to people. It's always done via public folder on Dropbox. That way I can just bring it up myself on the device and stream it because iOS devices all have the ability to stream from a Dropbox URL. Anytime there's a viewer like that, also gives the ability to actually, if I want to give that person the actual file, you just option click on the file item inside the Finder. It will give you a public URL you can then email to somebody, and then they could stream it or download it at their leisure. For photos, I don't think that's where it really using MobileMe really hurts the most, because there is nothing simpler than simply saying, I've got this great, here's the 11 shots I want to share. Click one button, give one name, and suddenly it's up there so that anybody can see it and with a certain measure of privacy. For that sort of stuff, I'm really just back to using Flickr because it's still my favorite photo hosting site. Not only as a way of sharing things with people in a way that you can control the privacy, but also as a way of having good full size JPEG backups of anything that's important to you. I just uploaded the keepers from last week and at the conference on World Affairs. And part of it is so that I've got captions and all of them. Part of it is so that I can, tweet it out and people can maybe see it and enjoy it. But also, it's the number of times when my foolproof photo organization and filing system totally failed me because I can't find the hard drive from 2008. But I know that I can't get the raw file right now, but I do have the full 10 megapixel JPEG version of that edited, cropped, enhanced up on Flickr somewhere.
Excellent.
What I'm really hoping is that iCloud in June, when she's WDC, kind of extends in the way music backup is done in the cloud. So all my music is now in the cloud. I can download it when I want. I'd like the same with my photos, my movies as well, so that I can instantly see any of the photos, download them back up. That would be really powerful if you covered those as well.
I don't think that's coming soon, though, mate, because all the new stuff with iPhotos just happened, doesn't it?
Not only that, but because remember that when you're re-downloading or restreaming music that you've bought, that stuff is already in the iTunes store. That doesn't cost Apple anything to house it. once we start telling people that you've just completed a 10-minute iMovie, it's about an HD, yeah. it's about 1.2 gigabytes, now that's when people are going to start bumping their heads on the free amount of storage they're going to get. And that's when Apple's going to say, hey, do you want your parents to see their new grandkids? $20 per year, please.
As for the copyrighted music bit, I suggest your mum does whatever she likes, mate, because no one's going to sue your mum. She's too nice.
Yeah. Well, I was told today that there's a little tick box with YouTube. If you don't tick it in terms of I want to monetize this video, then the copyright doesn't
no, they don't care.
Get analyzed.
As long as it's you and your friends and your family watching it, then it's fine. And as long as you're not making any money off it, I don't think they really care.
There are a couple like interesting restrictions. Like what they'll do is if you upload a video and it recognizes the song, in some countries just you can't view it. Like I know we did for ours some kind of video demonstrating something and used some kind of random track was playing in the background while we were making the video, and so like now you can't watch it in Germany.
Wow,
that's bit some other people too. Where not even that they dumped it in an iMovie as a background as background audio, but literally it's the kid was doing his little happy dance in the living room, but there's a TV on in the room and it was playing a certain song, and that's the reason why YouTube won't allow that video to be shown.
A lot of those are the content providers actually using their back doors to YouTube to delete without any kind of judicial process. There's no DMCA takedown or anything like that. They're just in there and right, it's gone, and that's it, over and done with.
I know what they do in the U.S., and I don't know if they do it in the U.K. or other places, but in the U.S., then what will happen is if Google recognizes the song, they'll take whatever ad revenue is generated from the views for that video, and it goes to whoever the copyright holder is for the song.
Mm.
They do that automatically.
But then there you go, having a really, really ugly Band-Aid of the lower quarter of your video. If there's 100 reasons why I think that Google is clueless, that's going to be someplace in the top 20. They don't understand that they've never watched television before. They've never seen a video in which there is a caption and the video somewhere in the lower quarter. No, that's where we'll put the ad, right above the information that people need to know to identify the people that who's talking in the video.
It's an automated online Shazam thing. There you go. Tell your mom not to worry, mate. She's
fine. Yeah. Thank you all.
Yeah. Give her love. Thank you for sending the video in. The video will be in the video podcast as well, so I just couldn't get it to stream tonight for some reason. Good, good, good. Next, it's time for the picks. Kaz, did you bring a cool thing for us, mate?
Well, as I seem to have gained a reputation for bringing some tips along.
Reputation. Got you.
Not the other one. Shh. Okay, so I've kind of looked at iTunes, which goes on to Chris's earlier statement. So he's either going to know all of these, and I'm going to be wasting my time, or he's only going to know a few of them, and I'll only partially be wasting my time. But for any new Mac users that use iTunes, you know, talking about music, as we were, I still use iTunes, amazingly, for all of my music. And I often use the mini player, which you can get to by pressing, obviously, that green, traffic lights.
Don't you just love the fact that when you press the maximize button, it goes smaller?
Yeah. Well,
there's an ergonomics there. But
there's a nice quick little trick here, which is if you press Command-Shift-M, it will go to the mini player option. And if you press Command Shift M again, it then goes back to its previous size. So that's a nice quickie to get to your mini player. Now, another thing that I also do a lot with music is create playlists, as a lot of people, I'm sure, do. But what I didn't, it's not that I didn't realize, I just didn't try it. But one thing that you can do with, obviously, your playlists is you can group them into a folder. So if you find yourself getting lots and lots of playlists, which you may well do for different types of mood or different people in the family, you can then group them into a folder just by dragging them. And that includes the smart playlists as well. So there's a little tip for you. Also, if you choose, I'm ripping these off quick and fast, aren't I?
That's fine.
If you choose a selection of records, if you then press Command Shift N, that will actually put them into a new playlist automatically rather than you dragging them over to a new playlist that you may have already created. So Command-Shift-N on highlighted songs that you may have, which then creates a new playlist. Now, the last one. So this is definitely the last one. Won't take any long. And this may create a bit of work. And this may be, I'm hoping this is the one that that Chris doesn't know about. One of the things that I do when I'm creating my playlists is actually I use the rating system in iTunes. And I don't know whether very many people do, you know, use the rating system. But I rate my songs as I go along. And one of the real pain in the butts for iTunes is you either have to use your mouse to click on the rating star that you're looking for, or you have to go up to the control ops. I think it's, I'm not even sure where it is because it's a real pain to get to once you've got that song highlighted, and then, you know, choose which star rating you want. Well, wouldn't it be nice if you had a keyboard shortcut, say command 0 for no star, command 1 or command 2? Well, Apple don't actually automatically do that. The way to do it is to go into System Preferences, go under Keyboard, and then once you're under Keyboard, you then choose... I'm actually doing this as we go along. That's why I think I spoke to you earlier. Now, this is a bit of a pain, and if I walk you through it, you know, we could be here all night. But what I've put in the show notes, Ewan, is a terminal command, which actually creates the scenario where you can press command 0, command 1, command 2 to star rate your songs. And what this does is automatically do what I was then trying to describe by going into the keyboard options, clicking onto the keyboard shortcuts, clicking on the application shortcuts. You then press plus, you then pick iTunes, and you then drag the star, which you will grab from your character viewer. So that's quite a faff. So go over to the show notes and grab the terminal command that I've put in there, open up terminal, run that command just by putting it in and press return, and you will be able to use your keyboard to get to your star rate.
Excellent choice, mate. Well done. I do like yours, actually, I have to say.
Thank you.
Please keep them coming. Definitely. Even send us a few when the week's you're not here. I managed to get your video in the other week, so we'll put them in each week. It's my problem's remembering and then stitching them into there, but...
Good man.
Thank you. Good picks. Or good tips. Andy, have you got a cool thing?
Yes, and this is something I was reminded of last week. Last week, the talks I give at that conference are you get 10 minutes alone, then there's a Q&A. And so, my goodness, if you have a tendency to sort of, you know, babble, that's a very quick 10 minutes. That's why I always have my iPhone in front of me running this really cool app called P-Clock. It's short for Presentation Clock. And it is just the epitome of a beautiful, simple, one-trick pony that works perfectly. You just simply set the clock for any amount of time. In this case, it's set for 15 minutes. And so, in front of you, you will see, there you go.
Yeah.
Now, just... tap the button, and now you have a very, very absolutely impossible to ignore countdown timer. You can also set it so that it changes to yellow. I've got this one set so that the numbers change to yellow when I've got 5 minutes left.
Oh, that's pretty
changes,
cool.
Changes to red when there's 1 minute left. Then when you get to zero, it doesn't like make an alarm, but it simply switches to black letters on a red background to say, shut up, wrap it up. You can also set it so that it'll vibrate so that hopefully you'll hear it, but the audience will not. I think that there's a separate versions for, excuse me, this version will run on the iPad or on the iPhone. There are times when I've been moderating panels where I actually use like the iPad, like sort of like out of sight underneath the table so that everybody who's on the panel can see how much time we have left. And also it prevents you as the moderator from having to pass that note saying, hi, yes, you were supposed to talk for 10 minutes and now it's been 33 minutes and they're starting to put the chairs away. I wonder if you could wrap it up just a little bit right now. No. Red letters, flashing, buzzing. I'll get the message across. It's a cheap app too. It's absolutely essential. I think this is a kind of a perfect app for what it does.
No, good pick. I like that one. I'm going to get that. Definitely. We're going to use it on the shows. Try and keep them to a bloody hour. Mr. Forsman, have you got anything that's cool?
I do have a cool thing, and it might be of limited appeal, but Apple makes some free tools available for recording artists and engineers and things that, so they can kind of see how their music's going to sound like once it's encoded into iTunes Plus format and uploaded to the iTunes Store. And it's a free download you can get from Apple. And what's interesting is it actually installs some scripts and things, but what I didn't know about this is that these tools are actually built into OS X. So in Snow Leopard and Lion, there are these audio transformation tools that are built into OS X, and iTunes uses them in the background. Like, for instance, when you import songs from CD, it uses these tools to encode the songs. When it plays back songs in iTunes, it uses similar tools to decode the songs and play them back in real time. But you can access these tools from the command line. So if you go to, I can put a link in the show notes if you
please, mate. Yeah.
If you want, I don't have it off the top of my head, but the tools are free, and there's a little PDF that comes with it that, you know, it explains all these esoteric things you should do when you're setting your levels and things like that. But it shows you how to use these tools in the command line. So you can do things like you can take MP3s or MP4 audio files, AACs, and decompress them back into a WAV file. And again, like I said, the appeal is probably pretty limited, but there's times when it would just be handy to be able to, like, transform different audio formats or do some different things like that. And I think it's really handy.
Do you get any audio artifacts with that, with a decompression or a lessened quality, or is it genuinely back to the original standard?
No, I mean, whatever artifacts that are introduced when an original file was compressed, it'll still be there. But
you don't get any artifacts in the reverse process, or any you don't get a downgrade in quality.
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Well, if you're saying you're taking it back to the WAV format, you're not going to go back to WAV quality, though, are you? So that's the point. You'll stay
right,
in the MP3
quality.
Right, yeah.
It's not going to sound like the original WAV file, no. But it just depends on what you need to do, but sometimes it's just handy to be able to convert something from one, particularly a compressed format, into an uncompressed format, and then use it for, you know, if you're putting it into some kind of, whatever, putting it in a video or doing something with that audio, it's convenient to be able to have it, that uncompressed format. Just some software just won't work with a compressed audio file.
Excellent.
In some cases.
No, I like that pick. It's good.
So it's just free.
Free we love. Excellent. Mr. Neighbor, what do you have for us?
I've been sticking it to the man this week, and I'm going to recommend some picks that help. I live in an enterprise, quite a corporate world, and I've been sitting in my meetings on my iPad, operating Windows and operating all of the IT software that all the IT guys are telling me I can't run on my iPad. And the app that is letting me doing that is called Citrix Receiver. And a lot of people might know this already, but as long as you've got a Citrix access into your work, which you may have or may not have, it is brilliant. It allows you to operate a full Windows environment, any apps, any access databases, everything really nicely on a nice interface. You can either choose whether your pointer is where your finger is, or whether you move the pointer with your iPhone, it's just brilliant. It really helps embarrassing those IT guys on how far behind the trend they are. I've quite enjoyed it this week.
Excellent.
And then the other one.
Yep.
Is the other one that really then sticks it to them, just to kick them when they're down. It's called Work Mobile. I'm going to speak to these guys tomorrow because this app allows forms to be written. So lots of work, in work, lots of forms are done. So we are doing forms for this, forms for that. Paperwork goes missing, paperwork's not filed. This is basically an app that allows you to complete a form, any type of form. And then it stores it in the cloud, its cloud, and then allows anyone on the access to your account to fill out that form for you and then send it, email it to a certain place. So all of that paperwork that we're doing, I'm now just in the process of just getting all of these forms just done electronically. It includes signatures, includes full drop-down menus that you design. we spent 20 minutes in work putting a form together, which is one of our forms that we use, and this thing is just now doing it electronically for us. So that's called Work Mobile. I think the guys are in Manchester in the UK by the telephone numbers. We're going to give them a ring tomorrow and just get them down just to help us out a bit more on the rollout. But both apps are kind of work-based, but they kick.
How much is that one?
That one is free to download, and they charge you £140 for 1,000 emails. They charge you to email the form out of the app.
Okay. You can make 1,000 forms for £140.
You can make as many forms as you want. You can send it 1,000 times for £140. And it's £200 for 2,000 times, which paperwork-wise for us alone is a huge saving.
Oh, very good.
So, yeah, that's my two.
Cool. My pick, my cool thing, is a bit of an old one, I suppose, but it's the Just Mobile AluPen. I've been, since I met Paul Kirkle, he inspired me to try drawing on the iPad, and I love it. I'm getting there. I've got the brush, the Nomad brush that's really, really cool. But in sketches, the Nomad brush really doesn't work that well for any of the tools particularly, and I've drawn mostly with my finger, but I've been sitting thinking, I really want a pen, and this is superb. If you open it up with paper and put it out, you get an instant drawing tool, and it's really, really good. And the harder you press and the faster you move, the darker it gets and all that kind of stuff. I don't like paper for any of the other tools and brushes and stuff. If you buy it free, you get the scripting pen here with it, and you can just draw virtually anything you like. And with the AluPen, it makes it absolutely effortless to just draw anything you like, and it looks really stylized. It's fantastic as a cartooning tool. Just superb. I love it. I am addicted to AluPen with paper. $14.95, that was from Amazon, so it's not cheap, but it's bloody brilliant. It really is good. I love it too.
When you say you pushed hard, the harder it...
the faster... It's not harder, it's not touch-sensitive, I was lying. But basically, you know, the faster you move, the thicker the thing gets, which is why it does when you do the swoosh, you get the thick end and thin end of it. And if you slow down, it goes to a fine liner, and then you fast again and it thickens up. I mean, it's brilliant. It's beautiful for cartooning. Absolutely excellent.
I like the fact that the AluPen, they just thought that, well, what if we actually flatten the sides of it like a pencil so it doesn't roll off the table and get lost? Just simple stuff like that. It's brain dead, but it's the reason why you buy this pencil, this pen, instead of the other one.
Did you see the other application, my other pick, actually, the Bluetooth on-off? That's what it's called. It's in the iTunes store. And basically, instead of having to scroll through all of the bloody menus to try and get to switch your Bluetooth off if you don't want it on anymore, it's an app you just keep on the front screen. Open it, off, close it. Done. I wish I'd thought of that. The dude's charging 99 cents for it. He must be rolling it by now.
I think it's sickening how they ruined the beauty and simplicity of the iOS interface by adding a layer of complexity, like having a handy tool that everybody wants and needs.
Okay, I won't
stand for that.
I can't tell you how much I hate menus, mate.
I don't know. I think that if Apple does not address that in the next major update in iOS 6, if there is not a two-tap way to turn off Bluetooth or turn and access stuff like that, I can officially say that they're idiots. Or in this particular area, they're idiots. Mm.
Didn't Don McAllister show a tip where you could create an app to get to that menu? I'm going to have to dig into that now, aren't I, for the next one?
Well, he missed the boat money-wise.
There used to be a way you could use URLs to do it.
Yeah.
There was an app released this week that gave you a button on the front on the actual app, wasn't there?
No, that's it. Bluetooth on-off, it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think, Chris,
that's
right.
That's what we were talking about, mate.
It's a URL. It's right. A URL trick. I don't know if that still works or not.
I was thinking that in 5.1 it didn't work anymore.
Right.
Okay. I think I heard that, but I don't know if that's 100% true or not. But I definitely
wouldn't
heard that
be brilliant if for 99 cents they charge you just to like open up this URL?
That's maybe what they're doing. Matt in the chat room, who's the guy who's I had a play with his on the photo walk, and I thought, great, I want one of these. And he's just said, you should have said something on Monday night, you, and I've got a few of them. You could have had one for free quite happily. Damn! I nearly had to have an edit point there. This family-friendly podcast, the number one Mac podcast in the UK at the moment in iTunes. Huzzah. Thank you for everyone who's put us there. Andy, you are on the number one Mac show in the UK.
Damn straight.
Wow.
Woohoo!
And it's powered by UK2.net. They pick up all the bandwidth for all of the silliness that goes out on the network. We've got extra shows going on. We've got an iOS show, which is going to start in the next 2 weeks, hopefully. They've already done a pilot and they're going to do a second one. We've got a Welsh podcast coming. It'll be purely in Welsh, so you won't understand a frigging word of it unless you speak Welsh. And they may actually be saying names, calling me names. If I hear my name on it, they're going to be in trouble.
But I speak a bit of Welsh.
Well, okay, you might get half of it then, if that. But it's proper Welsh. It's technical Welsh, which means that probably Welsh doesn't have the word for some of the technical stuff. So you might get English words or technical words pop up. But we've got a Welsh language podcast coming in as well. And also, we've got a beer podcast coming. That's going to be good. And I'm going to go to Diageo in the morning and see if they'll sponsor the network with Guinness, because I don't drink enough Guinness. UK2 pick up all the bandwidth for all of the shows, even the new ones that are coming. They are wonderful. They've got tons of stuff available for you. If you want anything to do with web hosting, e-commerce, anything like that, go check them out first. See what they've got to offer and then compare the prices with everyone else, and you'll probably be quite surprised. Do bear in mind, though, you're going to get 15% off anything that they've got, and 15% applies to your renewals as well. As long as there's a voucher code box in there, you put that in, you will get 15% off. The offer code's BagelTech still at the moment. There's a new code coming next week, though, which will be British Tech, I hope. And then you've got DNS management. If you're transferring in DNS management, that will disappear entirely if you put in the code Bagel DNS. Give them a look out. Go to our website. Go to their place. Have a look what they've got to offer with a click through, and then buy what you want. See what it can give you. There's competitions at the moment as well. If you vote on the site builder application competition, you could win an iPad 3. They're going to pick someone out. I think it's next week or the week after at random, end of the month perhaps. But give them a go. And they're also sponsoring the Marussia F1 team. So the F1 show here on the network, we're hoping we're going to get someone from Marussia on. I've talked to Craig and Craig's looking into it for us. So that'd be fab. Could. Absolutely brilliant. UK2, please support them. We're lost without them. Where can we get a hold of you, Gaz?
Quite simply, you can go over to gazmaz.com, and there's lots of links over there as where I can be found. But I'd just like to give a quick mention. Guy, myself, over at the MyMac podcast, are doing our 400th episode next Tuesday.
Congratulations, mate.
That will be, actually, it's 400th for the MyMac podcast. We've done about 115, 120, something like that, of those, the last 115. But it's the 400th episode, so we're giving away lots of prizes. So if you've not been over and you've not entered, it's probably too late, but tough. That's all I'd say.
Excellent. Thank you, mate. Andy, where can we get a hold of you, pal?
As always, I'm on Twitter at Anotko, if you can spell my last name. If you can't spell my last name, go to CWOB.com. Over my celestial waste of bandwidth, I'll take you to my blog. That's my links to my Twitter, my Flickr, and all kinds of other
cool now stuff. Why was Defender on the iPad not your pick?
Well, because I was so busy looking for that cable that I lost that I forgot to really think of a pick, and then I saw then the first thing that came to my mind was the presentation clock.
Which is good. No, it's a good pick.
Then I went to look. I can verify that the Bluetooth hack no longer works because I just tried to access it and it does not work. And then I went ahead to go back to where get the screen back on. And then I saw, ooh, Defender, that'd be a nice thing to have in the back. And so now I've totally ruined about 50 minutes worth of airtime by explaining why.
Cool. No. Defender is always welcome in this place.
The second best game ever.
Well, we got Spectre last week, didn't we? Dr. Happy Matt, the tank game, and now we've got Defender on. Brilliant.
Elite for the Acorn BBC is the best game ever.
No one's ever done a cool thing during the Where Can We Get You? So first hole for you, mate. First hole. Mr. Forsman, where are you, pal?
I am always on ArsTechnica.com. and you can read all my clever writing about Apple and iPods and iPhones and what have you. And I'm also always on the Twitters at Forsmack.
Under 4,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
Good man.
Yeah, if you don't want to read all 4,000 words, just read my Twitter stream, I suppose.
That's usually 140 made into 4,000.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Neighbor, London Mac User Man, where can we get you, pal?
With the London Mac User Group, which is where we meet every second Monday of the month. And we are currently gearing up for, we guess, the next keynote event that Apple may hold, where we will probably take over a large venue in London. I think Ewan's going to come round for the British Tech Network as well. And we are going to have lots of people take over a large event in London watching the keynote event. If we can get it live, we'll stream it. But
from WWDC.
That's where we're going to be. Absolutely.
It's going to be the next one, isn't it, I think.
Yeah, Clough at HQ on Twitter as well.
Excellent. We are going to be back with the big show in a little bit. We'll also be back with the Daily Show in the morning. And then we've got Nonsense Show on Saturday night. And then the F1 Show on Monday from the Bahrain Grand Prix. We've also got the Bagel Tech Bash. If you want to come to the Bash, you need to buy a ticket. You're going to get the money back, though, at the moment. So don't worry. It's going to cost you £21.85. Go to Eventbrite. It's britishtechnetwork.eventbrite.co.uk, and you can buy yourself a ticket there. It's going to be a ticket only affair, I'm afraid, so we need to know how many people are coming. If you turn up and you haven't bought a ticket, the door will be, well, no, you won't, we'll let you in. What am I talking about? We're useless. I was going to be all stern, but then I thought, we'll sort it, come along, we'll find a seat for you, don't worry.
Please don't try to occupy the event.
And hopefully, Andy, and
we know you can. We just, please don't.
You think it's going to be like Occupy Texas, Occupy Austin thing? They're going to come to Occupy the Bash?
Oh, we just hope not. I mean, we're nice. We're so totally not the 1%.
I haven't heard from Gaddafi. I sent him an invite, but nothing's come back. So I don't think he's going to be there. There we go. Andy, you're going to try and get over.
I've blocked out that week. If it's at all possible for me to get there, I will get there. It's been
we have awesome. Some irons in fires, mate. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. We're going to see what we can do. Yeah. But with the best of intentions, you should be here, I would say.
I've been showing a little leg on this side, too. Don't worry about it.
Oh, have you? Good man. Thank you. That's what we need. We'll see you again next week. Thanks for listening.